Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Preacher Boys podcast. I make this show for you, and I hope that you really enjoy it. I have a lot of people that ask me how they can support the show financially, and you can do that by heading over to patreon.com/preacherboys. You're going to get access to exclusive content, including early releases of episodes. I've got a couple episodes right now that have been released at least a month early over on Patreon. You've got access to things like unique merch, depending on what tier you join, and you get access to some behind the scenes content that I'm posting within the group. So head over to patreon.com/preacherboys and become a member over there today. Every single supporter helps make this show a little bit more possible, especially as I continue to add additional episodes and content every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the show.
Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
Welcome back to the Preacher Boys podcast. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me on today's show.
Of course, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, excited to talk with you. And I appreciate you humbling yourself to come on my show. You've already spoken with Josh Harris, which is a pretty recognizable name and probably a source for many people's own religious trauma. But I'm really excited to hear a little bit more about your story. Take me back really to your introduction to independent fundamental Baptist kind of world. Like, how did you end up in that bucket?
Yes. So my parents, they both went to college at Hiles Anderson, which is a big, it was a big fundamentalist college in the 80s and 90s. I think they're just struggling to survive today. But yeah, back in the 80s, they were a big deal. And my parents met there. And my dad was studying pastoral ministry or something in that respect. And my mom was studying English. My mom became a Christian school teacher. And after being in that environment for a few years, she was like, I do not want my children to be in this environment. I want to homeschool my children the rest of my life. And so that's what my parents decided. And it took my parents like 6 to 7 years, I think, to have children. So they were worried that they were never going to have kids. So they prayed so hard. And when they were finally had children, they were like, oh my goodness, we're going to try to do our best because God blessed us. So we're going to try our best to raise them in this fundamentalist Christianity. That was their attitude. Yeah. And so,
not to interrupt you so early on, but were they already in that world pretty heavily, or were they first generation? Because I think it's important because there's a lot of people who, once they have kids, they drive really hard into this world because they want structure for their kids. And sometimes I think first generation parents who are well-intentioned end up putting themselves in sticky situations.
Yes. So yeah, they grew up in it from birth. That's all they knew. And yes, that is an important context. And so my parents decided to homeschool me our whole lives. I usually, in the interviews I've been in, I usually try to keep places and people's names secretive. But in this video or recording, I decided that in a kind and constructive way, specifically name people and who I feel like need to be called out, honestly. And like just, and also the church I grew up in, which it might ring a bell for you, but I grew up in Gospelite Baptist Church in Walkertown, North Carolina. Brother Bobby Robertson, he died a few years ago, but he pastored that for 60 plus years. So that was the church that I was brought up in. And when I talked in other interviews about it, like I thought it was normal. Like I look back at my childhood and I see the brainwashing, because I remember I had neighbors who were Methodist and I thought they were evil because they were Methodist.
Right.
And I talked about that in Josh's show, how I was a very dogmatic little child. Like at 8 and 10, I had been indoctrinated to share the gospels or the Bible with people. And Gospelite, it was a KJV only church.
Yeah.
Like my parents have very strong beliefs that like the King James Version Bible was the only true word of God, and any other version was not legit. Mm-hmm. And like, I usually don't share this story, but I decided because it really made an impact on me as a child. But I remember someone who clearly did not know my mother. They gave her an ESV Bible and she looked at it and she was like, I really want to throw this in the trash can. Like, and so I was like, are you like, and but she was like, but something feels wrong about doing that still, even though I don't believe this is the true word of God. She's like, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. And so she had that moment of cognitive dissonance, I think, in her mind, because she had always clung to the KJV only, but she couldn't follow that through with throwing away this ESV Bible in the trash can. Right. So that was just so, I realized how extreme a beliefs they had. And before I say anything else about my parents, which I'm going to reveal a lot more about beliefs, like I want people to understand that they grew up saturated in this environment. Mm-hmm. They knew nothing different. And I've tried to have compassion and understanding. And I'm not trying to throw them under the bus or anything. I'm just saying things that happened to me growing up.
Yeah.
But looking back, like it's honestly ridiculous, but they're were times there were certain shows I was not allowed to watch. If a show had an interracial couple, I was not allowed to watch that. And that's one thing as a child that really stuck out to me, these things, because even I knew internally that was wrong for them to have that racist view. But they said, oh, I don't know if they have that view anymore, because this was like over a decade ago. So I realized they're not the same people anymore. They're not the same people they were a decade ago. But I think it was, the show was Lab Rats or something like that, some old Disney show or whatever. And I just remember that as a child, just these certain red flags that kept popping up. Okay, that's weird.
Yeah.
And just something was off, or realizing how extreme their beliefs were and how they used the Bible to back up these beliefs.
Yeah.
And I remember before going to Bob Jones that my mom was, she had been upset that they had lifted the interracial dating ban in 2000. And so I was like, and I tried to confront her about that. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with two people of different races getting married and stuff. So I'm like, we're not in the freaking 60s anymore. Oh my God, like please. And so she just stood behind her Bible. And I don't know if she still has that belief anymore, but I love my mom so much. And she genuinely is a wonderful person, but things like that really bother me.
Right.
It just breaks my heart to how, and I'm sure an environment she grew up in, she was encouraged to believe that, and it was ingrained in her. So my whole life I was homeschooled. It was like a KJV only type approach. I was socialized into my church, and I think since I feel like this is a more, you said some Christians follow you too, I want to go more into a little bit of like my salvation story, because that's a really important part of it. And I feel like it was like the beginning of my religious trauma. And I was around 8 years old. And this was at a service at Gospel Light Baptist Church. And the preacher was preaching on a very graphic descriptive sermon on hell. And here I am, 8 years old, all these images in my mind about these demons torturing people for eternity, and you're just burning forever. And as a child, that was so scary to me, because I feel like every child has somehow accidentally burned themselves. So like we have that reference of knowing what it's like, and then we think, oh, if I'll feel that forever. And I remember that night, I could not get to sleep. I was so scared. And I would have so many nightmares as a child too, because of sermons like these from my church. And I remember, and for, I don't know, I know there are some non-Christians. So for people, like getting saved, it means you like ask Jesus into your heart and to save you from hell. And it's supposed to be a one-time thing and you're saved forever and all this stuff. That's what I was taught growing up. It's the admit, believe, confess type kind of prayer type thing. And I remember that night crying, I couldn't get to sleep. And I asked my mom, I want to get into heaven, blah, blah, blah. And that's when she led me to, she helped me say the sinner's prayer or whatever. And I've done that four times since then. when I was eight. I've done it five times as a total throughout my life, these salvation moments, because I always had that fear of, what if I didn't mean it? What if my heart wasn't in it completely? What if my book is not written, or my name isn't written in the book of life? Did I do it out of love, or did I? And when I got older, I was like, I realized my faith was crumbling because the foundation of it was on sand. It was on fear, guilt, and manipulation. I felt so much pressure to conform to fundamentalist Christianity. And because of the environment, like, I was surrounded by it. It was suffocating. And even though my parents, they never explicitly said things to me, but things were implicitly implied through their behaviors. But whenever I wouldn't conform even to their specific beliefs, they would treat me differently. Like I was like a black sheep or something, or lesson, or disappointed, or they would give me this silent treatment. And so as a child, I just started realizing, okay, the more I conform to this, the more validation and love I can get from them. And that was my way. And I think that was happened unconsciously, really, as a child. And I was talking, I'm in therapy now because of religious trauma. And I was talking to my therapist a couple of days ago, and we were talking about emotional trauma or emotional abuse. And I talked to him and I said, I remember in my childhood, as children, we want praise from our parents. We need that validation. And I told him, I was like, whenever I would do something good as a child, I would go to my parents and be like, oh, I did this good thing. Like, I deserve this, or I deserve a piece of candy. And I remember my parents telling me that, no, you deserve to burn in hell forever. And so to have your child, this young child, come up to you just wanting validation, and you tell them you deserve to burn in hell forever. Like, for a child, that is emotionally scarring. And after that happened a few times, I realized I could never say to my parents, I deserve something. And I felt as a child, I had no inherent worth. It was only through my actions. And because of that, I felt so much pressure to be perfect 24/7, because I felt that's what my love was based upon. And so when I didn't meet the standards, I felt like total crap. No. So it was just like these highs and lows. And when you're stuck in this system, it's really hard to look at all the issues and realize what's wrong with it. And now that I've gotten out of it, and I've been questioning fundamentalist Christianity for probably 4 to 5 years. And I remember when I was like, I think I was like 17 years old, and I'm 22 now, but at 17, I got a book on how just not fundamentalist Christianity, but fundamentalism in general, how it can be toxic and harmful. Like, you can be a fundamentalist atheist. You can be it's a mindset. It's not just inherent to Christianity. There are fundamentalist Muslims or whatever, of different faiths and different worldviews. And really, it's this mindset of, basically, it's just dogmatic. Like, you're right. It's a strict adherence to the law. And specifically, the scary thing is there are different interpretations. So people, they're like, this is the right interpretation. You better follow this, this way. And they see it as the absolute truth, and it's what everyone needs. So there's a lot of complexity into the psychological part of that. And I'll try to get into more of that later. But as I began to question it, because I struggled with my mental health, and I was always told, oh, just read your Bible, pray. This is just spiritual warfare. Or, oh, you're not close to Jesus enough. Oh, you don't need to get closer and all this stuff. And so I'm like, oh, it's my fault. And so I would do everything the church would tell me to do, and it wasn't working at all. And I had never, at that age, I was probably like 14 or 15, I had never stopped to consider that the church's ideologies and messages were the one really harming me, because I was always given the impression that religion can do no wrong, which we can look at history and know that's not true at all. And I had issues too growing up with my own sexuality, which I talk a lot in Josh's video, because I was always taught a very close-minded, hateful view of LGBTQ people. And for me to experience homosexual urges was like a moment of cognitive dissonance for me, because I remember having a very hateful, negative view of gay people. And then experiencing those feelings myself, it was like a moment of cognitive dissonance for me. And I was like, and that's what really made me start to question the church and their approach. because I was like, okay, so they're not being honest about this issue, or they're just wrong about it. So it made me look more into context and bias and how they were interpreting scripture. And for me, like before a college education, like critical thinking skills were also highly discouraged in those kinds of environments. And so I had no idea that your, because I was in the environment, and this is crazy, but like I had no idea that there were different ways to interpret the Bible, that people had different views on it, because that's all I knew. And I was like, I didn't realize that we all have this, a different lens or a different perspective, different glasses, I guess you would say, we're looking through because of our life experiences and our own biases that we have. And so once I started realizing that, especially when I got into college, I started to not just submit to authority. Like I was taught like blind submit, don't question. Like whenever I was spanked as a child, they're like, oh, you disobeyed us and I'm going to spank you because I love you. There wasn't any like more deeper going into it. Like you just disobeyed authority and that's it. And so I never learned logically why I would get punished for things. And so I feel like that really made me like, I had a lot of bad experiences with authority growing up, but I feel like that definitely affected my view of God. And what I knew, as a child, I guess I was around like 16. I was like, there has to be a better approach to Christianity than fundamentalism. Like, I'm like, if this is the only right way to be a Christian, then I don't want to be a Christian because this is just miserable. It was just constant misery. And I was in a podcast today, and my therapist too has really helped me process this. And we were talking about social connection and how we're social creatures and we really need this. And I told him, I was like, I was saying to my therapist, I was socialized, like I was in the church in my homeschool group. And he was like, Andrew, he's, it's not just about talking to people, but do you actually, is that love you give and acceptance you give, is that given back to you? If no one gives love and acceptance back to you, you will suffer psychologically, mentally, and emotionally. And so once he really said that, it just totally, all of these repressed things, just emotions that came up. And I realized, as you know, there were a lot of reasons why I suffered growing up: internalized homophobia, basically extreme self-hatred, emotional needs weren't met as a child, not being socialized in a diverse environment, and like even issues with my own relationships with my parents and stuff like that. So there was like, it's a complex thing. And when I talk to my friends about it, they're like, it's not just religious trauma, it's other trauma. And I was like, well, I understand, but I'm like, religion has influenced everything, like everything my parents have done to me. So it's an response to that. So I'm like, in a way it is. And I remember in church just disassociating because I just couldn't handle all the hateful sermons and the screaming and the yelling. And I got physically sick every single Sunday because I hated it so much. It was so miserable. And I couldn't, there were sometimes I let my parents know that, but then again, that just motivated them to shove their religion down my throat more. Oh, something's wrong with me spiritually. I'm supposed to love church. So when I had these issues, I learned to be silent about them because the more push I gave against their approach to Christianity, the more they just shove it in my throat and put more, so this just made it worse. So I was like, okay, I'll just suffer in silence for now because it'll just make it worse if I talk to them about it. And so I remember every Sunday just being nauseous. It was the worst day of the week for me. And part of that did worry me growing up because I was always told, oh, if you're a Christian, you're supposed to love church. You're supposed to enjoy. Yeah. And you said that God puts that desire inside of you. And you know, when I got older, I was like, you know what? I'm like, this isn't the only kind of church there is. There are so many churches. And it didn't offer a place of community or love for me at all. Like I never felt that belonging and acceptance. And I even talked to my therapist. I was like, I've always felt out of place everywhere I've been. Mm-hmm. And I told him, like, I've had 4 depressive episodes throughout my life. And I've almost committed suicide 2 times throughout my life and all these different things. And really, and what I told him is that I've done a lot of work through my past in dealing with my own religious trauma and how the church traumatized me. And I told him, I'm like, I'm coming to therapy because I want to get all of it out. Yeah. I don't want to forget everything. I need to process this because I want to move on with my life. And I know I'm like, I think religious trauma, it will affect me the rest of my life, but mm-hmm. it doesn't have to control me or my well-being.
Yeah.
It doesn't overpower me. So that's why I talked to my therapist. I'm like, I'm just trying to get through this. And I guess go into the issues of fundamentalism. So like legalism is an issue. And from a fundamentalist perspective, legalism is where you believe your works will get you to heaven. Mm-hmm. But that's the extreme. There were definitely gray areas of legalism in my church. And it's where they would add rules to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And God's approval on you seemed, as a child to me, they seemed to be based on what things I did. So I lived in constant anxiety as a child, afraid of everything I did. And I was genuinely afraid that God would kill my family at any second, because the story of Job scared me so much as a child, how this righteous man and God just completely wrecked his life. And so for me, I thought my parents were so righteous and good people. I'm like, oh, God's out for my parents. He's going to tell them, or I pray for sin, God's going to be mad at me. And it was confusing to me because I was taught that God or Jesus died on the cross and they were forgiven. But then they preached us every Sunday like we were worthless pieces of shit. And so I was like, are we not in Christ? Are we not forgiven? It doesn't really sound like it, because there was still that shame mm-hmm. and guilt. And honestly, just daily. And I talked to my youngest brother and I was like, do you feel traumatized by this? Because I'm like, I have been greatly affected by our upbringing. And he told me, I never believed any of this crap. He's like, I've been an atheist since I was really young. I don't believe in God and stuff. So I never got, he told me, he's like, Andrew, you got emotionally invested. You actually believe this and you actually cared about this. And that's why it affected you so much. Yeah. It's because you believed it. And so that was really, I was like, wow, I'm like, I don't think I could go back. And I don't think I would want to go back in time and change that anyways, because I think there were times where I felt like the Bible and Christianity was helpful to me. I guess more personally in my devotions, church was not helpful to me, but I guess my own personal devotions were a time, I guess you would say, for me to reflect really. But yeah, so legalism, like when they basically add different rules, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Brother Bobby, because first, I want to say that he was genuinely a very loving and kind person, mm-hmm. but the admiration that people have for him and our church was almost, it really seemed that it seemed like a cult at times. And this occurred to me when I was around 16 and it was in church and someone was praying in the pulpit, and as a church member, and they were praying to God. And they said, dear Jesus, please help us to be more like Brother Bobby. And when he did that, I was like, aren't we supposed to be more like Jesus? Why is he praying to God for him to be like another man? And I looked up and I'm like, did anyone not hear that? And the pastor never acknowledged what he said. And that was a big sign to me. Okay, I'm like, the admiration people have for this man is really excessive. And it was almost as if like Brother Bobby was like on the cross himself beside Jesus or something, or he was right beside him. And I understand why people admired him, because to them, he was an example that, oh, Christianity must be true because this man is so loving. And so genuinely was, he cared about everyone. It didn't matter who you were. And that's what I did love about him. He would go and walk up to the balcony, and it was a big auditorium. And if he saw someone new, he would go and introduce himself. Like, he looked for people to love. And that's what I did really love about him. But the admiration people had for him, I thought that was extremely ultra dependent and unhealthy. Yeah. And my parents, they would do anything he said in the pulpit, even if it wasn't biblical. Like, I remember as a child, they called it mixed bathing, this Christianity. And it's where children, prepubescent children of opposite gender swim together. And I wasn't allowed to swim with friends of the opposite gender because it was called mixed bathing and that was a sin and blah, blah. I thought that was stupid. I was like, what? We were children. Like, we had no, I guess they were, I don't know, maybe they were afraid that it would awaken sexual desires or something at like 8 or 9 or 10 years old or whatever. But I see that a lot in these environments. It's just the sexualization of children way too early, especially with purity culture.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even allowed to go to the movie theater. Like, I thought that was stupid. So I'm like, they show kids movies there. Like, why does it matter if I go and watch like a G movie for kids? Which I think most of them are PG now, but it doesn't matter. But stuff like that. And so if Brother Bobby said it, don't do this, then we wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And that really made me realize, okay, I really look up to this man too much. Yeah, so the legalism. And I've noticed, like, I've learned the psychology behind legalism is it's called a righteous high. You have all these high standards, and there you can look down on people who don't follow them, and you can be like, okay, I'm better than them. And I see that. I saw that at Bob Jones too, with certain leaders who just sought out to just correct people just to make themselves feel better, to get this high of, oh, I'm self-righteous, I'm better than you.
No.
And in churches, fear is used a lot as control. And I told you about my salvation story about hell. Like, children are scared into getting saved and committing their life to Jesus before they even know what consent is anyways.
Yeah.
And one of the memories I remember from like church camp as a child, like gospel light, we had a church camp in Virginia. And I remember my youth pastor and his wife, they ran the camp. I remember the pressure that was put on children there. I remember them. It scared me so much as a child when they said, like in sermons, you could be the reason that somebody goes to hell and burns forever. So that's so much psychological pressure to put on a child. Like, then when I got out of it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I better tell this person they could burn in hell forever because of me. It was too much of a psychological burden to put on a child. And what I have noticed too, regarding fear, there is a manipulation tactic I've seen a lot in fundamentalist churches, and it is called the fear and relief tactic. And it's where they put this huge burden on you.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily biblical. And then they offer you the solution to take that burden off. And it's just an emotional thing. It's emotional manipulation. And recently, an example at Bob Jones University, back in early January, there was a sermon where the entire time, the preacher was just making everyone feel like they were worthless. He said, none of y'all will amount to anything. He's like, you're just a pink blob in the universe and all these things. You're nothing. And then he put this weight of shame and feelings of worthlessness on everyone. And then at the end, he was like, oh yeah, just give your life to Jesus, blah, blah, blah. And it's, wow, dang, like, this is not spiritual. You just emotionally manipulated all of us. And that's a tactic that I have noticed as I've learned. And they keep another point is generalization. They generalize anyone outside of the church because they want you to stay in the fold. They want your tithe. They want your attendance. And that's how they keep you in, because the unknown is scary anyways. We're afraid to do the unknown as humans. That's natural to us. It's our survival instinct. And so adding on to that, they just paint these ugly pictures. Like, for example, the LGBTQ community, they painted these ugly pictures of all of them.
Yeah.
And even of other churches that were more progressive and had like contemporary music. And it was this feeling of, oh, like, we're different. Like, we're the ones, we're the right ones. You know what I mean? And so this fear of the outside world really kept people dependent on the system. And I think an example of why abuse happens so much in these churches is because when someone in these churches, when they see abuse, they're so afraid to speak up about it. Because number one, their families in their church. Number two, their friends of their church. Number three, they're financially dependent on the church for some people. And if they lost the church, they would have nothing. So why risk it by speaking up about abuse? Just sweep it under the rug. Don't like rattle the cage. Don't worry about it. And that's what I thought about, like, for me personally, like, afraid of speaking up about things is how much of a commotion it would cause and a backlash.
Yeah.
And another point is for fundamentalist churches is anti-intellectualism is how they're specifically, I remember my pastor slamming college education. He's, yeah, these students go to college and they do all these things and they know everything. And then, so he gave the impression that, oh, if you go to college, like, your faith in Christ is like going to be lessened. And then I thought about that. I'm like, if your religion is true, shouldn't it like strengthen and lessen and stuff like that? But I think his point was that he thought all colleges, or specifically secular colleges, were trying to turn us against religion or something like that. And like, in these religions, they can, or in fundamentalism, they can teach us, especially to use scripture, your heart is deceitful. And so they convince people to not trust themselves. And when you learn, when you're also reducing critical thinking, so when you have reduced or no critical thinking and you just can't think for yourself, emotional maturity does not happen. It just doesn't. If you can't, because you have to think to emotionally regulate, that's an issue. And if you don't question authority, like pastors can get away with anything. If you question them, you question God himself. Like you can't do that. So they put God like right beside them or make them equal with him. And so authority has no accountability either. And so, yeah. And also if people can't think for themselves, they're not going to really leave. It's so easy to control people who can't think for themselves.
Yeah, right.
And it's comfortable to not think for yourself. It's comfortable to submit and not question. And some really don't want to think for themselves. And I think part of this is that every adult, even though when we leave our parents' home, we have an inner child and we want that adult figure and we want someone to take care of us and look after us.
Yeah, we crave
that structure. And another thing is isolation, which I talked about earlier, is they isolate you. And I think, yeah, I had on earlier how abuse can easily be covered from that. And for me personally, like hateful messages were a big part of my trauma. The burden that I felt like they put of like guilt and shame, and they were very condescending and hateful towards the LGBTQ community. And I think as a child, when you hear all these hateful things, you associate that with God. Because this authority figure is just angry. And I feel that's what happened to me. And I see there are some people I know that they are so knowledgeable about the Bible, but they have no love in their hearts whatsoever. And I feel like I just went over the gist of systemic issues in Christianity. And so now I know you wanted to go more into the fashion design controversy at Bob Jones University. And for people who don't know my story, I ended up at Bob Jones University because my parents, they would only pay for a Christian university and they wanted me to go to Pensacola Christian College. So I didn't want to do that because they were more strict. So Bob Jones was like plan B.
Yeah.
And for those of you who want to hear more of my experiences on there, you can go to my Instagram page, but I don't have time to get into that. And I want to specifically talk about the fashion design issue.
Yeah.
So for a quick overview for people who just tell people what it's about, a student at Bob Jones University had a senior fashion design exhibition and it stepped on some people's toes. It got some backlash.
Hey, everybody, we're going to get back to the show in just a minute. But before our brief intermission, I'd like to introduce a thought-provoking new podcast called Psychotherapy. That's two words if you're going to go search for it right now. This show sheds light on the very real issue of abusive therapists and pastoral counselors. In every helping profession, including therapy, there's a vulnerability to exploitation. And Psychotherapy delves deep into the red flags, risks, and real-life stories of those affected by unethical practices. Tune in to Psychotherapy with Leah Denton on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your shows.
I'm Leah Denton, and this is Psychotherapy, a show dedicated to providing survivors of therapy harm a platform to share their stories and to offer language for those of us trying to make sense of our own experiences with the psycho in the therapist chair.
Yeah, I'll share it so people can see it. But
oh, dang. Okay. Gotcha. You're ready.
There we go. Yeah. No, I pulled it up. I had pulled it up here right before we had hopped on because I think for a lot of people
to know,
yeah, who don't know what this is, there was a fashion show at Bob Jones University, and this outfit in particular stirred up a little controversy, yes. Put it lightly.
And the thing is, there were people who had different opinions of it. They're like, "Oh, this is great," and some people are like, "No, this is terrible." And oh yeah, that's the one that really triggered people.
Yeah. Ooh.
So much.
Yeah.
And what happened was these people who aren't educated on art don't realize that art is open up to different interpretations. Art is not black and white. And because you see something one way doesn't mean that's the way it was intended at all.
Right.
And that's really hard for fundamentalists to understand because they have such a black and white mindset. To them, they're like, what?
Yeah.
Like it's neutral. What? That's not possible. And so I'm going to go into the story of it, but in a sec, I want to talk about the issues that happened leading up to that point. So Bob Jones will discard and throw in the trash any student who doesn't conform, or any student, even if it's unintentional, seems to hurt the reputation. So the student who did this, Dr. Pettit, the Bob Jones president of the university, he trashed basically the student in an online statement, which is on his Facebook account. And I think it's still there. And I took screenshots on it, and I'm thinking about posting it on my Instagram soon. But he basically said that it was clearly blasphemous and that it was like disrespectful. I don't remember all the words and stuff, but it threw the student under the bus and his work without even trying to talk to him or understand his intentions with it.
Yeah.
And so what happened as a result of that is students and faculty got very angry, and students started a petition for the school to handle this a better way, because Pettit did not handle it in a good way at all. And I believe what happened was that a donor was offended and they were threatening to withhold funds. And so Pettit reacted out of politics because he didn't want to lose money. And so he's okay, I guess. And I'm not saying this happened. This is just me speculating. Just want to make that very clear that I think that he got scared and he was like, I'm just going to disappease the donors just to please them and keep this money. Mm-hmm. And I know now there was a faculty member. I'm not going to say who it is because I don't think that matters, but they have threatened to resign unless the school and Pettit addresses this issue in the right way or basically apologizes. And so now I'm going to start in the beginning of how this all began. So going back to, I guess it was around October of 2021, I was in a commercial photography class because that was a part of my major. I was a visual arts major with a concentration in photography. Yeah. And for the commercial photography class, we photographed the senior fashion design outfits for their show. So the pictures they can have and print them and all that stuff is a collaboration we had in the departments. And I was interning for the art department, and I controlled the BJU photography page. Mm-hmm. And my teacher was like, you know what, Andrew, if you could just record what's going on in class and post it on the story, add them to your highlights so prospective students can look and see what we're doing in the classroom. I was like, okay. And when it came to the fashion design project, that was what I did, was the behind the scenes of the shooting. And the first day of shooting went well. And the second day, this isn't specifically had to do with this senior, but I could tell these students were pushing the standard clothing standards, definitely, of the Bob Jones dress code, in which I thought they were all fantastic and great. But from the Bob Jones fundamentalist perspective, it wasn't to their standards. So there were girls, like they were showing their shoulders. One girl had a midriff, and guys were wearing earrings and some makeup. And some of the clothing was gender neutral, it seemed too. So it was more progressive type clothing.
Yeah.
And I posted basically what was going on. And some of the guy poses were feminine too. And I still posted it because I was like, you know what? I'm like, number one, these students have been working on these outfits for many, like at least a couple of semesters.
Yeah.
And it's like, this clearly had to be approved. And number two, there were two other faculty in the room and they didn't say anything. So once I saw them directing and not having a problem with it, I was like, okay, I guess this is fine. Then maybe Bob Jones is progressing.
Yeah.
Slight possibility. And so when I posted it, within a few hours, there was backlash and people DM'd me. And I ignored it because I'm like, I'm not taking that down. Like, I hate censorship, especially creativity. No one should be censored. And what happened was over the weekend, I got a text from my teacher, I'm not going to say her name. I almost did, and I'm not going to. And so she was like, can you meet with me in my office? And I was like, huh? I was like, that was just weird because we don't have meetings like that. Like, we usually at the end of each meeting, we plan it. And then I realized it was about that issue. And I ran to her office and she told me that a lot of other things had happened, that people from California had screenshotted the story and sent it to the provost of Bob Jones University, who knew him. So he's a big role there and having an issue with it. And so in the beginning, I accidentally put this spotlight on the fashion design department and show. And people just started talking about it mainly amongst BJU alumni. Can you believe our school is doing this? Oh my gosh. you know, and what happened was my teacher made the chair of our department aware so that when this provost came to our department, they were like, we could say we're handling the situation. And my teacher, she told me, she's like, Andrew, she's like, I've been trying so hard to protect you. She's like, everyone has been throwing you under the bus and talking behind your back and trashing you because you posted this. But she's so Christian, by the way. But then she says, she's like, once we found out the whole situation, that there was no clothing check, there were faculty in the room, the responsibility was off of you, and we had to deal with these issues in the department. And so I was like, oh, okay. So it was great to not be in trouble. Because for me personally, and my therapist too is concerned, you just seem to have drama that follows you, Andrew. You accidentally caused these scenarios. I'm like, is that you do this unconsciously or something? I was like, I don't know. We'll talk about that another time. But at first I felt really terrible about it. Mm-hmm. And then I stopped feeling bad about it because I'm like, you know what? There are systemic issues that this is exposing that need to be dealt with anyways. Yep. And I thought that was going to be the worst of it, but it kept getting bigger and bigger. And so when the show finally came around and some politician, I'm not sure which Republican, retweeted these posts, but this public Republican who had a lot of followers tweeted about Bob Jones University. And I think he was just accusing us of becoming progressive or liberal or something, like it was such a bad thing. And it just got so many retweets and so much attention. And then of course the donor saw it.
Yeah.
And that's when Pettit decided to rashly just put this statement out.
Yeah.
And it just threw the student under the bus. And like I said earlier, these kinds of institutions, they will discard of anyone to protect their reputation, even if it's the wrong thing to do. They don't care who you are. And so we saw that happening. And there was an uprising kind of, or argument among the student body, because a lot of people, the student body were on the art student side, and a lot of people are on the artist side of this show and how he was treated.
And if you read his statement, it wasn't a very transgressive act. You know what I mean? Like I would even understand to some level if the intent was like, I want to try to be this sacrilegious statement, because I always try to see both sides. Like I see the look at the college rep, but
yes.
So like I read the statement from Matthew Fox, who was the designer, and like the statement on the design for Jesus said, it's red to signify blood, Jesus blood and died. He covered our sins completely and fully, like a wrap coat covers the body completely and fully. By now I would hope we are all speaking the same language of allegory and not literally idolizing the model wearing the crown. He wouldn't like that. This is the beauty of fashion that I wanted to illuminate my culture to. It's more than gender signifiers and sex barricades. Dignity and sanctity are woven into our expression and communication through dress. God taking on a body weaves divine dignity and sanctity into our defiled bodies. The crown of thorns on the model was supposed to be a dose of reality to our view of the crucifixion. And I wanted to solidify Jesus' death as a physical, violent act of redemption and not just something we see in old paintings that get excited about at Easter. Like, I feel like that's pretty in line with the theology of
it is,
the college. But it's just expressed differently.
It's expressed differently. And the issue is, it's exposing these systemic issues more particularly into the conservative view of what women or men are supposed to wear. And like, when you have reactions to these things, what people don't realize is that says a lot more about you than it does the actual artwork.
Yeah.
And I think if people really realize that, they wouldn't like react, but it's an unconscious thing they don't realize.
Yeah.
And so I think, not for everyone, but what happened was these conservatives just seeing Jesus portrayed and it's something that kind of resembles a dress. And I think because of our culture, or that culture, just seeing that bothered them. But then we have the living gallery at Bob Jones. We depict Christ in these robes and stuff. So like they weren't wearing pants. Yeah. You know, in Jesus's day, like, what do y'all think he was wearing? So it's a cultural thing that just, they've been ingrained in this fundamentalist religion. Like, women wear dresses, men wear pants. Mm-hmm. And so seeing that change triggered that, I think, in some people. And sadly, there are some people who see, oh, fashion is just a feminine thing. Men shouldn't care about that at all. So the fact that it was like fashion, it was like, I don't know, that they were feminizing Jesus in a way. And some people might see a big issue with that, which clearly I didn't think that was the case at all. Yeah. But people have their differences of opinion on clothing, I know. Mm-hmm. And so I think that kind of sparked that. And I think people can, especially fundamentalists, they can associate their personal convictions as absolute truth. They can blur the lines between those things. And so they're like, oh, this is my personal conviction. So this is the Holy Spirit inside of me. I'm sure of it. Mm-hmm. And so this is so disrespectful and blah, 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 and all this. And I just want to say, I think the reaction to Pettit's post is hilarious. All the comments, I'm not sure if you read the comments or saw Pettit's statement, but a lot of people were defending Matthew, and they were like, what is clearly blasphemous in this? Because he said it was clearly blasphemous, and he didn't say why in his post. Like, he made a claim without any evidence or, you know, anything to back up that claim. And so then people were like, what do you mean? What is clear? And Pettit didn't post any pictures of it, which, of course, I'm sure he wouldn't want to cause any more controversy, and that's why he didn't. But it showed the true colors, mm-hmm. I think, of that environment. And there were issues in the very beginning process of the fashion design program. And even if those things would have been fixed, this still should have never happened. This student should have never been demonized like this and thrown under the bus. And I'm going to make sure I made notes of the story and everything, because I just want to make sure that I got the gist of it. I didn't leave any details out, but I think basically I just wanted to tell everything that I knew. Mm-hmm. And I know that Dr. Pettit has met with Matthew Fox and had meetings with him. I've had no idea what has gone on in those meetings or what they've talked about or any conflict resolution that they're working on. Pettit hasn't come out and addressed the situation yet. So beyond that, I don't know. I reached out to Matthew Fox because I felt really bad. And I was like, I'm so sorry that I accidentally caused all of this. And what he said to me was like, I can't remember what he said specifically, but it was basically like, he was saying that there were a lot of other issues involved and that it wasn't like me. I just accidentally started off a chain of events.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of issues involved in the system. And it's funny how I realized when this happened, how they threw him under the bus. And I got expelled from BJU because of the Josh Harris video. And so all they said to me was when I got kicked out was that, oh, because you said you were deconstructing Christianity or that you've left Christianity for now. And I went into my story about how I was so traumatized by religion that, you know, I get PTSD symptoms for going into a church. Like, that's not normal. I get so much anxiety and I have so many mental health problems because of all the trauma experiences and religious settings. So I talked about how basically I'm on a path of healing and I've left this for now.
Yeah.
And I've talked to different people and I'm like, one day I hope to reconstruct Christianity, but it's going to be a healthy Christianity if I ever do. And I'm going to have to be in therapy for years. And I think if there is a loving God, he will be patient and he will be fine with that. And he knows my heart and what I've been through and what I've had to deal with. So I trust that if there is a loving God, that everything will be okay when I get to that point. Yeah. But I think this is what they did not say in the meeting. Number one, they never brought up my sexuality at all, which I was shocked about. Because that's when I first came out publicly, in a sense, was in Josh Harris's video. And I put the perspective on it, how the church traumatized me because of my sexuality, basically. And so I revealed that in the psychological abuse I endured. Mm-hmm. And so they never mentioned my sexuality and they didn't really talk about anything else I said in the video. And the weird thing is Bob Jones, they are allowed to discriminate against LGBTQ students and they're allowed to discriminate against women because they have a Title IX exemption. So they very well could have said, oh, you said you were gay in this video, so you're kicked out. They could have done that.
Yeah.
But they learned the hard way almost probably a year ago. They kicked out a student because she came out as a lesbian. And they kicked her out and she sued the Department of Education. And it was all in the news. And she gained a big following online. Her name is Elizabeth Hunter. And she put this spotlight on the school. And she was like, basically, she sued the Department of Education because she was like, the government shouldn't be giving this school money if they're discriminating.
Yeah.
And so I think for them, they didn't want to say that to me because they didn't want me to speak out about it. Yeah. So they acted like it never happened. Like they never mentioned it. They never talked about it. And like they genuinely, they handled out the kicking out in a kind way. They genuinely wanted to like not wound me anymore or hurt me more than I'd already been hurt. And I think also they didn't like the attention the video was getting because I think a lot of people on campus were sharing it. And we're talking about it. And a lot of people were supporting me being like, there is spiritual abuse going on at Bob Jones University. And I recently did a poll on Instagram. I was like, what toxic things have happened to you at Bob Jones? And these are things that have happened like in the last few years. And I just want to quickly state some of these things. And it really, some of these things really shocked me and broke my heart. And I didn't realize some of these things still went on, but one of these things is normal. So someone said being judged for differences of opinions in gray areas, which like I said, people can take their personal convictions and make it absolute truth in a way. And some person said, I think that this is funny. They said 95% of the students and staff are judgmental, hypocritical, and snobby. I wouldn't say 95%, but there is this preppy type kind of atmosphere to the school. And someone said the fact that they judge the validity of one's salvation. So they try to figure out with their own criteria if you're saved or not. If you have like an issue, they're like, oh, let's say if you're really saved. And this one person said the fact they do not prepare students for the real world. They just teach us how to survive. They micromanage us even when we're not at school. I know one person almost got in trouble for going to a dance over a break, like a swing dancing. So stuff like this, even outside of school, they try to control things we do. And let's see here. They teach that any physical connection or physical touch is sexual. Yeah, guys and girls aren't supposed to hug or hold hands at all on campus. One person wrote, like, they don't recognize eating disorders as issues. I know there have been a lot of bad experiences with girls with eating disorders there. One person said, this girl, she's, they looked me in the face and told me I should be ashamed of my body just as Eve was. And then even this is common in all of, I feel like the fundamentalism is the fact that women are held accountable for men's actions regarding sex. Like women are supposed to like completely cover their bodies. And if a woman is sexually like assaulted, oh, like what were you wearing? And I feel like that's in our culture too. It's penetrated into that. Oh, what was she wearing? And it's no, the guy should have never done that anyways. That's no excuse to hurt someone. And one person wrote, girls have many more dress code rules than boys. And the thing that really bothers me about Bob Jones is that they promote tattling. And they make these students who tattle, they make them their favorites. Basically, because they want these students to go out and tattle on as many people possible, because the staff, they can't get out amongst the students and investigate. But if they can get these students to do it, they're happy to do that. And it's just really, so you don't know who you can trust at Bob Jones sometimes. You're like, is this person just looking for someone into trouble? And you know, and Bob Jones, here's another example. They've had issues with sexual abuse in the past, like victims being blamed for it. Like I just mentioned and talked about, we had an issue with a counselor where he told a bunch of women it was like basically their fault. And there was a lot of backlash to that. And one person wrote the fact that they teach that mental illness is a sin and medication is unnecessary in a sin. And that made me angry because in these environments, it's like they never acknowledge that trauma is a thing, or they don't consider genetics or biology or chemical imbalances. Yeah. Like these people just don't consider everything. And let's see. Okay. Then someone said this, a teacher said that all mental illness was due to not trusting God enough. And she said, the teacher said, including disorders like schizophrenia and dissociative identity disorder. And she's, this is crazy. Like it was a counseling teacher who said this, and was, you don't like, if you have schizophrenia, like that's not your fault. And someone responded to the tattling thing and it's funny, and I love this because they brought the Bible into this. And they said, the Bible says that we should go to our brother first. However, they encourage telling on people. The rule book states, if you don't report someone for breaking your rule, you will be treated as if you broke the rule yourself. And they don't encourage you to talk to your brother. They encourage you to inform the university. So that, I love that, because she put a little biblical twist for defending why that's wrong. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. And they only accept you if you act a certain way to their standards of a Christian. So I didn't meet their standards of what they thought that Bob Jones Christian should be. So they kicked me out.
Yeah.
And one girl, which this really broke my heart, she said, women are held accountable for husbands / father's abuse. She said, I went to one of the counseling professors about my dad's abuse. And I was told I should have been a better daughter and not caused him to do those things, effectively pushing the whole, the man is the head of the household. And if he did it, you must have deserved it narrative.
Yeah.
And there are a few. Okay. First, I want to say there are a lot of wonderful teachers and faculty at Bob Jones, but they have a few bad apples that they should not have at that university. And one, and I think the professor did this, which he might not have, but I know there is an issue with a professor there named Dr. Mazak or something. He's a biblical counselor professor. Mm-hmm. And he's had I've heard a lot of awful things about, he said, like spiritually abusive things. And the women's dean at Bob Jones, Dean Lawson. And I've never heard one good thing about this woman. And I had a friend who got in trouble, and she told me, she's like, Andrew, she's like, I went to this woman and she didn't get in trouble for anything sexual at all. And this woman just accused her of doing all these sexual things, basically accusing her of being a slut and a whore. And she's like, Andrew, she's like, that wasn't what I got in trouble for. And she just started accusing me of all these things. And I think it's just one of those instances where she's been in power for so long and no one wants to like let her go. And I'm sure students have, I know parents have called the school about Dean Lawson and how hateful she's been to girls.
Yeah.
And she shouldn't be that way. She seems like a very legalistic person, just looking for people to get into trouble to make herself feel like she's so high and mighty. And also, here's an example, like for the fashion design controversy, they really restrict creativity in the fine arts and arts. Yeah. Let's see. But I think, yeah, those are the gist of them. And like, these are things that happened the last few years. And spiritual abuse and emotional abuse is going on at Bob Jones and is going on in these independent fundamental Baptist churches, but no one is talking about it because it's so normalized.
Yeah.
And people are afraid to speak up about it. Yeah. And we're so scared of authority. We're taught to submit to authority. And I don't regret going on Josh's show and getting kicked out, because this has opened so many doors for me. And so many Bob Jones students have reached out to me to thank you so much for speaking up and talking about this, because we're all so afraid to. And I've had people tell me awful stories about how they were spiritually abused and even sexually abused by spiritual leaders, and how they leveraged that role to abuse them. And it's, we can't, and I saw this at my church, and it's where we had this like addictions program. And if someone got saved or whatever, because the Bible talks about you're a new creature, it was like they were a new person. You got saved, we'll put you in this leadership role with no background checks. No. And it was just, that's just really scary when you put that much trust in an adult and someone even just who will be around kids, you just don't background check. And like, I realized, you know, my church, 90+% of the people are like 70 and over. And I realized they grew up in a different time where they didn't have to worry as much about that. But it's, we live in a different day and age now. And like, I recently talked to someone about this, and they were like, Andrew, they're like, a lot of sexual abuse happened then, but it was just covered up. Yeah. Like it's always been this way. They just covered it up.
Yeah.
And even other institutions, they're like, I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, so right now they're like, the truth is really, it's people are starting to find out. And in these environments, it's just really poor leadership and poor management. And when you have people submitting to this one person, and in these churches, women, like, they're not allowed, they're supposed to be quiet. Like, they're barely even allowed to speak. So how can they talk about things that are going on?
Yeah.
And again, like I was saying, if you do speak up, you can be shunned and lose everything. It's just a lot of toxic elements and dynamics that makes these places such a perfect place for abusers to be held accountable and to thrive in and to hurt people.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, I think that's why these conversations are important. And I think, again, I think it reveals a lot, like you mentioned, the response, like response reveals a lot. And I think the fact that there is this resistance against these conversations, like the conversation with Josh Harris or the conversations that are being had on shows like this, it reveals a lot. I think especially when we get in conversations about truth, you know, and I'm in my own journey figuring that out for myself.
Yeah,
I think it's a scary thing when I see people recoil from that discussion or when they say that's a dangerous place to be, because truth, I don't think truth has anywhere to hide. I think you should be able to have those conversations openly.
Yeah.
I think you should be able to have those discussions openly. And I think to have these pre-drawn lines or restrictions on what you can talk about or can study really, really doesn't make sense, especially within a college where you're supposed to be learning how to learn. But yeah, man, I really do. I appreciate you sharing. Mm-hmm. And I know this is all very recent and new and fresh, and you're probably in a lot of ways scrambling to figure out what's next and what does the path look like forward. Mm-hmm. But I do appreciate you being so open and for sharing. It means a lot to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you so much for getting back to me and having me on the show. Yeah. And I know I feel like this is Josh gave me the platform I've needed. And I've been asked to be on a lot of different podcasts, and I've reached out to many people because I'm trying to get the word out. And I'm so thankful for the work that you are doing.
Thank you.
Specifically with Independent Fundamental Baptist. It's because a lot of us, like you said, we the truth can't hide. And a lot of us, it makes us so uncomfortable, the truth can't, of what's really going on. We don't want to talk about these children being emotionally, psychologically, and sexually abused within the church. Because if the church isn't safe, then where is it safe? Where are we safe at? And I think there's that fear. We want to keep this illusion that the church is a safe place. And we just want to let go, I guess. It's like, oh, I'm safe here. But because of this mindset, we don't hold people accountable. And it's a place that thrives with abuse. And before we're done, I know I want to say quickly, how we were talking about how this is a difficult issue. And to talk about religious trauma and abuse in the church in general, and specifically with religious trauma, what I think is a controversial issue, specifically, I know, to religious individuals, but more particularly fundamentalist, because they believe that their religion is the spiritual cure for mankind, a cure for cancer for the soul, per se. And the fact that people are being abused and that religious trauma exists in these environments, it causes them discomfort or cognitive dissonance, because it's contradictory to what they personally believe about Christianity, as it oh, it's all good. Nothing bad can happen. This is the answer. And so when this happens, this can cause people to blame people who are abused. It's your fault, because they don't want to deal with the issues that are going on in the church. They don't want to examine leaders. They don't want to examine themselves. So they blame the victims. Oh, it's your fault. This place is amazing. You did this. So that's a major issue, is that churches, they're not examining the issues. And they're just ignoring them, and they're building because they don't want to examine themselves in these systems of oppression.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's a lot easier to throw someone under the bus than address the issues within your own bubble. Lot easier. Andrew, for those that want to connect with you and really keep up with you, where's the best place for them to do that? How can they connect with you?
Yes.
Or are you off the grid?
No, I am not off the grid. Let me tell you, my Instagram is Andrew Pledger, but the A is a 4, and for my username. So on my Instagram page, I post a lot of different videos, quotes of my own, and even memes, and just education on religious trauma, psychology, and things like that. And I've been writing a book since I was 19. So I post information about how my progress is on my book. And I've decided the title of my book is going to be Suffering in Silence, a story of surviving and healing religious trauma. Mm-hmm. Because religious trauma, I believe there are a lot of abuse that is people suffer in silence, but religious trauma is specifically a silent suffering because so many people are afraid to come forward. So I thought that was a powerful title. And I don't know when I'm going to publish it, but I'm taking my time with it. And as I grow in therapy and personally in my own life, I'm hoping by the time I'm at least 30, I want to publish it. But it's my little baby, so I'm trying to be really careful with it. You know what I mean? If people want to follow that journey with me there too. But yeah, my Instagram page, that's mainly where everything that I do goes on.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. And for everybody listening, be sure to click the link in the bio and connect with Andrew, follow his journey and keep up with what he's doing. But for now, I will close out the episode and I'll see everybody over on the Preacher Boys discussion group and all over social. See you guys.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes and don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Additional information can always be found on PreacherBoysDoc.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.